We are continuing in our study in the book of 2 Kings and in 2 Chronicles. We're going to kind of go between those two tonight. But we've been looking at Elijah's being taken up to heaven, and of course Elisha then becoming a very important prophet in the book of Kings. There were of course other prophets. He was not the only one, but he was a major figure of the day, and had received that double portion that was laid on the shoulders of Elijah. And so we spent some time looking at that. We're going to finish that up quickly tonight and then move forward back into the Kings. We're going to go back to the north in Israel, where Elisha has been doing a lot, is in the north. We'll see that continue this evening as he even goes into Syria, or has something occur in Syria based on a prophecy that he gives. We'll look at Joram in Israel and Jehoram in the south in Judah. Very easy to confuse those two. You need to read those verses very carefully to know exactly which one you're talking about, because sometimes they're even spelt the same way. And we'll have a lot of other names, like Hosea. There's several people named Hosea, and they all kind of right there together. There are even two brothers who are both named Hosea. I couldn't help but think about George Foreman. I think George Foreman named his kids George Foreman 1, George Foreman 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, which I always found interesting. But I guess he'd never forget their names. But we'll see that. But we'll look at Hosea and then Jehu. Won't get there tonight probably, but we'll also look at the mother of Hosea, Athaliah, who has a short stint as queen in Judah. I think the only queen named in Scripture of people of God. So kind of interesting time period. Let's finish up what we were looking at with the deeds of Elisha, which I did. Somebody pointed out to me on my slides, I switched the name Elisha with Elijah. That was just one of those things. I was running through them and my fingers took over my brain, or my brain took over my fingers, one of the two. But we've noticed how Elisha's been doing these things, healing the waters. You remember the irreverent boys and what he did there. Prophesied of the defeat of Moab, blessed the widow's oil. Then, of course, he had the interactions with the Shunammite woman, where he blessed her and then raised her son. Elisha then purified the deadly stew. He prophesied of the healing of the Naaman of leprosy. He gave him the cure, and of course, Naaman then had to just fulfill what God had told him to do. He caused the axe head to float, chapter 6. Then we read last week about Elisha's army in chapter 6, verses 8 through 23. And then as we ended last week, we saw the prophecies of the end of the severe famine in Israel, and then Elisha's advice to the Shunammite woman to leave for the period of the famine. Then we saw her return and her land given back to her. And that's where we left off. So we're going to go back to chapter 8 and look at there at verse 7 and following, and notice kind of what's going on here. So who's the king in Syria at the moment? Ben-Hadad. And Ben-Hadad, a good guy? No, not really. Right? He caused Israel a lot of trouble. He, of course, was not a godly man. Well, we meet an even worse king in Hazael. And we'll notice a particular prophecy about this in this section. So let's go to verse 7. It says, now, Elisha came to Damascus. Now, Damascus, of course, is the capital of Syria. It's right here on the map. And so, like I said, Elisha actually does a lot of work in Syria for God. And so he's sent to Damascus. Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, was sick. So he's there while Ben-Hadad is sick. Ben-Hadad has a servant named Hazael. And so he tells Hazael, and I'm going to paraphrase some of this. We'll read some of it too. But he sends Hazael to Elisha to ask the question, shall I recover? Interesting, isn't it? That here's this man who is not a godly man. He's not an Israelite. Yet, where does he go to find out what's going to happen to him? Prophet of God. Now, why does he go to Elijah in particular? Well, I think it's the reputation of Elijah. Elijah's done a lot of stuff, a lot of incredible stuff through the power of the Holy Spirit. Of course, God's really the one doing it. But Elijah had was really well known, had a big reputation, just like Elijah did. And so here's this this ungodly man, and he sends Hazael to Elijah. And so he asks the question, shall I recover? He's got somewhat the answer maybe he thought he wanted, but not really. We continue reading. Hazael goes, verse 9, and he brings all these gifts with him. And he stands there before Elisha, and he asks, end of verse 9, your son, Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, has sent me to you, saying, shall I recover from this sickness? Now, I don't really understand the whole phrase, your son, because he's not an Israelite, and I don't know particularly, and I'll just confess, I don't really know why he says that. He's a Syrian, but he addresses him in that way. And he says to him, your son, to Elisha, shall Ben-Hadad recover? And so Elisha in verse 10 gives an interesting response. What does he say back to him, verse 10?
He will recover.
Okay, so stop right there. He will recover. Right? That sounds like great news, right? You want to hear that. You go to your doctor. You've been dealing with something for a while. That's good news. You're going to get better. But he doesn't stop there, does he? He has to add this last part on there.
But you're going to die.
But he will surely die. Now, that's odd. I thought you said he's going to recover. What do you mean he's going to die? And then Elisha does something odd. He sits there and stares at him. You ever had anybody stare at you? Does that feel comfortable? It doesn't, does it? You know, it's kind of like, why are you staring? Stop looking at me. Would anybody like to be stared at?
The kid knows they're in trouble when they're being stared at.
You ever get those mom eyes, you know? You start to feel it in your toes, right? That burning sensation as she sends her laser beams upon you. But here's Elisha, and he begins to stare at him. Now, I don't know exactly why. I guess it probably it's what his response is going to be, and he just wants to stare down the man who's going to do this. And it says there in the text, and I was thinking about this, it says that he, verse 11, he fixed his gaze, talking about Elisha, fixed his gaze at Hazael, and stared at him until he was embarrassed. Now, the pronouns there, it's kind of, can be kind of difficult to know who was embarrassed. Because he uses, there's not that switching between pronouns that you'd normally have in writing. My assumption is it's Hazael, that Hazael got uncomfortable. Maybe it was Elisha. He realized he was staring. Maybe he felt embarrassed. But I think it's probably Hazael. And so what's his response? Had a guy sitting there staring at me? Well, verse 12, it's not Hazael that responds first. It's Elisha. What does he do? Another kind of odd response. Starts crying. This has been one of those conversations that's kind of, whoo, you know, going back and forth to kind of weird areas. First, you've got him saying, well, he's going to recover, but then he's going to die. And then he sits there and stares at him. And then he's staring at him. He then starts to cry. And Hazael's like, why are you crying? What's his response?
I know how wicked you're going to be.
What's that?
I know how wicked you're going to be and how much harm you're going to cause my people, Israel.
He begins, he's contemplating what the ends are going to be.
Prophesying, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's prophesying about the what's going to occur in, with Hazael when he becomes king of Syria. What does he say he's going to do to the Israelites? He's going to burn their cities. What else is he going to do? What?
Destruction.
Young men to be slain.
Not treating people as children.
Ripped up
of
the women.
Yeah, I mean, like, really brutal stuff. Now, I mentioned before, Ben-Hadad is not a good guy. But from the impression that Elisha's giving, Hazael's going to be worse. He's just going to be brutal, utterly brutal king. You think about guys like, Domitia. In Rome, and you go back and read some of the things he did. He was an awful, awful person. Like the things he did to Christians and others, it was just awful. And you've got Hazael as a guy kind of in that line who's just going to do horrible things along the way. And so he gives this prophecy about what's going to happen. Now, I guess I didn't. Back in 1 Kings chapter 19, if you remember, right after God brings Elijah out of the cave, and Elijah, you know, he's kind of desperate, and he's complaining that he's the only guy left. And remember, God speaks to him not in the thunder, not in the earthquake. And all those like natural disaster things, but God speaks to him in a still small voice. And then God goes on, I think it's verse 6 and following. No, it's 15. Verse 15, what does God say to Elijah? A few things Elijah's got to do before the end of his life. He says, number one, you're going to do what? What?
Go back where you came from, anoint so and so king of Israel. Recognize I've got some other people
that
are still
following. Okay, so he says you're going to anoint Jehu king in Israel. You're also going to anoint Hazael king in Syria. So, and as far as I know, there's no recording of when Elijah did that. But if you read the text, he doesn't say Elisha's going to do this. God says you're going to do this. And so you have this confirmation again of Elisha doing it, which is kind of interesting. I was rereading that today. But God had long ago predicted this transition. Now, what's unusual about it is normally how does succession work in kingdoms?
Heir to heir.
Heir to heir, right? Father to son. Usually father to oldest son would be the normal succession.
Master's going to recover, but mm-hmm. you're going to end up becoming king. And then as soon as the guy recovers, he goes in and murders him.
Yeah.
Well, he'll be king.
Let's go ahead and just go down to verse 14. So he departs, verse 14, from Elisha. So remember, Elisha's in Syria at the time. I think he actually said he came to Damascus. But he goes back to the king. Now, you notice that when the king says, what does Elisha say to you? What's his response?
You're
going to
get better.
He doesn't include any of that other stuff there. And the next day, he then takes a bedcloth, dips it in water. Whew. This speaks to his brutality. Here's his king. He's a servant of the king. And he just smothers him to death. Either smothers or drowns. I don't know. Probably smother, right? Maybe he did. He's fulfilling the prophecy, but that gave, he at least seems to give him the momentum to go and do it. But he just brutally murders him. Now, what I find fascinating, and there's a lot that's not in the text, how does he go from a servant who murders the king to then being king? I don't know all those details. The Bible doesn't give us that. But he does, and he ends up becoming king, and he is a brutal king and a thorn in the side of Israel. It's not Hazael that will eventually take captive Israel, but he will treat them very brutally. So that kind of ends this section of these deeds of Elisha in 2 Kings. Any question on any of those? All right, so let's move to Jehoram. Jehoram, he reigned about 554 to 843 BC. One of the things I was going back through and rereading, dating in Kings and Chronicles is kind of difficult. And some of it has to do with translation. It's hard sometimes to translate numbers exactly. And so when we give dates, of course, these are just estimations. We could spend some time looking at all these discrepancies. In this class, I just don't want to do that. But there are some things where we have to kind of work out what's going on here. But he reigned about 854 to 843 B.C. And so if we go to 2 Kings 1:17, so we're going to have to go backwards here for Jehoram. The text here does not say very much at all about him. But we'll talk about what little we do know. Verse 17 says, "So he died." Now who's the he there?
Elijah died?
No, Elijah didn't die. Ahab died. So Ahab died. According to the word that Elijah had spoken, Jehoram became king in his place in the second year of Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat. See, you got to, and like I say, those names can kind of be confusing, but this is Jehoram and Jehoram are the same person. So, but he, Jehoram, in Israel became king in the second year, according to verse 17, of the son of Jehoshaphat, because Ahaziah had no son. And we'll talk about Ahaziah later on. So we're kind of introduced to him, and we'll talk more about him in just a second. So I want to look at this chart for just a second. This is, like I say, I really like this one a lot because it keeps, in my mind, at least the families of the kings in together a little bit. It helps me divide them out. But if you look at the chart, you have the names in blue. Now, why are they in blue? Well, those are the kings of the United Kingdom, exactly. So you had Saul, David, and Solomon. That's the period of unity in Israel. And then, of course, the son, with the son Rehoboam of Solomon, God divided the kingdom. He gave 10 of the tribes to Jeroboam and 2 Benjamin and Judah to Rehoboam. And you can see kind of going down there. Now, one of the things you might notice is on one side, you kind of have almost a straight line down. Other side, you don't. The ones in pink. Why is that?
Well, probably intrigue with families in Israel.
It's what?
So more infighting and intrigue and stuff among people in Israel where they're killing each other off.
Yeah, and also it has to do with God taking the kingdom away from certain families. So you remember, he points Jeroboam. Jeroboam acts very wickedly, and so God takes away the reign of Jeroboam's family, and then he gives it to Baasha. Unfortunately, Baasha does the same thing. It's taken away from him, and then it's taken away from Zimri's family, and then finally you have Omri. All these are bad guys. They're just a succession of just evil kings, one on top of the other. There's one king in Israel, one king that really kind of stands out for doing some righteous things. We'll talk about him in a little while, Jehu, but for the rest of them, I mean, it's just evil. And then, of course, you get the son of Omri is who? Ahab. And, of course, his wife is Jezebel. She kind of stands out for her evil behavior. And then they have two sons that are significant. You have Hazael. Hazael got into trouble. I think I said Ahab earlier who died. I'm sorry, I was wrong about that. That's Hazael died. Not Ahab had already died. Sorry about that. I just correct myself. I'm glad I thought about that in the moment and corrected. So earlier we're talking about Jehoram becoming king. He became king, why? The text told us. What's that? And he died in what? Without having any sons. So Hazael dies, he has no sons, and so Jehoram then becomes king. And so then you see the succession go. But what's going to happen to Jehoram? Again, God's going to take the kingdom away and he's going to give it to Jehu. And then you'll see the succession go on down. You get to Zechariah. Again, the kingdom's taken away. And then we'll get there, though, eventually. But I like this chart. The other side, of course, you have Abijah, Asa, Jehoshaphat, Jehoram. And then we'll talk about Athaliah in a little while. That was the mother there of Hazael. We'll talk about what's going on with her. There's also, I'll say this last thing. You notice the line that goes across from Athaliah to Azariah? Why is that? This is really significant.
The mother's the...
Yeah. That's true, but she is the sister of Hazael and Jehoram. She's their sister. And that connection is going to cause them a lot of problems, and we'll talk about that as we get there. So I really like this. We'll refer back to it. Again, we have the chart here, here on the board, just a little bigger look at it there. And then we've been going down, of course, this chart, just noticing the good kings and who they were. So let's go back here, what little bit we know about Jehoram. If we go to chapter 3, verses 1 and following, in the 18th year of Jehoshaphat. Now this is what I'm talking about. So this is where the chronological thing, it's a little difficult. And because there seems to be, and I'll continue to study this, a little bit of a discrepancy between chapter 1, verse 17, and chapter 3 and verse 1. In the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, Jehoram, son of Ahab, became king over Israel and Samaria. He reigned 12 years. He did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, though not like his father and mother. For he put away the pillar of Baal that his father had made. So, that's an interesting description, isn't it? He was bad, but he wasn't quite as bad as his mom and dad. Now, his mom and dad kind of set records for bad kings. Now, there's a guy later on who will be even worse, but he wasn't quite that bad. One good note about him was is he got rid of the pillar of Baal. However, verse 3 tells us, nevertheless, he clung to the sin of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. What was the sin of Jeroboam? This keeps coming up over and over again.
Idolatry.
And in particular, what idolatry?
Well, priesthood was taken from the Levites.
Mm-hmm. So number one, he set up those two golden calves in Bethel and Dan. And then, secondly, he changed the priestly order and changed the word of God. So he got one thing right, but that's about as far as he went, seemingly. He made Israel to sin. He did not depart from it. So what is the significance of that phrase? He did not depart from it. He was unrepentant, right? To me, that says he's just completely, like you say, he's just leading them further and further away. Go ahead, Jerry.
The prophet to him and warned him, and he just doubled down on his evil.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's about all that's said of Jehoram. Now, 2 Kings 5, I'm guessing here. Total guess, but I believe he's the king in 2 Kings 5 with Naaman. When Naaman comes to have his leprosy healed, I believe, from my just interpretation of it, is that Jehoram is the king in Israel at the time. And you remember his reaction and how he reacted to that situation. Yeah. You trying to kill me? All right. And so I just wanted to point that out. When Naaman comes, he, of course, reacts not in a holy way, but in a, I'm just afraid of the king. All right, so that's about all I can say about him. There's really not a whole lot. There's nothing, one good thing said, and the rest really bad. The worst thing, I think, though, is that statement, he did not depart from it. He just seemed to be completely unrepentant. So, you've got Jehoram in Israel, and you have Jehoram in Judah. This might get a little confusing. So, Jehoram in Judah was the king after whom? Jehoshaphat, right? He's the son of Jehoshaphat. Now, you also remember it wasn't just Jehoram that was united with Ahab's family. It was also Jehoshaphat. He also had married a daughter of Ahab. Well, that seems to be a tradition that continued. Those families were interconnected for a while. Of course, eventually God's going to destroy the family of Ahab. We'll see that in Jehu. But Jehoram... verse 16 tells us, in the fifth year of Jehoram, the son of Ahab. So, according to 2 Kings 8:16, Jehoram in Israel has been reigning about 5 years at the point that Jehoram in Judah begins to reign. It says, when Jehoshaphat was king of Judah, Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 32 years old when he became king and reigned 8 years. I guess a moderate reign of time. There are several guys who can reign much shorter. There are guys who can reign much longer. So he's somewhere just shy of the middle, the median there. But 8 years. Again, not a whole lot said about him. Just real quickly, you just see him there below Jehoshaphat. We're going to see, though, he gets into trouble as well in his reign. If you go to, you also note that he doesn't have the smiley face. He's got the evil look there, the red face. He was not a good king. It says in verse 18 of chapter 8 that he walked in the way of the kings of Israel. Now notice that. Now, what does it say about the kings of Israel? They walked in the way of
Jeroboam.
Says about this king, this guy, Jehoram, that he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel. Which probably indicates what? What can I imply from that? He was wicked, but what in particular about his wickedness?
Idolatry.
I think we can imply here that he was a one who allowed idolatry in the kingdom and supported it. It says, as the house of Ahab had done for the daughter. Now, what was the house of Ahab? Well, they did, of course, they were very involved in idolatry, but what idolatry in particular? The Baal worship, right? That was Jezebel's, I guess, religion. And so she really supported that. And so it says about Jehoram that he had walked in the way of the house of Ahab. For the daughter of Ahab was his wife. Now, we're going to find out who she is. She is Athaliah, and she'll come back later, and she will not be a good queen. But his daughter his wife Athaliah was the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. He did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. Very just basic, but very common phrase of far too many kings. Verse 19 says, yet the Lord what? Was not willing to destroy Judah for the sake of David his servant, since he promised to give a lamp to him and to his sons forever. You know, I almost think about Moses out in the wilderness wanderings. And God, they time and time again, what did they do? They bickered, they complained, they wanted to go back, they lacked faith. Right, and so several times God said, I'm just going to wipe them out. You remember one time he even tells Moses, he says, I'll just kill them. I'm paraphrasing, but I'll annihilate them, and then I'll raise children from the stone from you to be my children. Right, and but because of Moses pleading, what did God do every time? He relented from destroying them. Now they still had to suffer because of their lack of faithfulness in the wilderness, but God relented from what he wanted to do. God wanted to completely destroy the earth in Genesis chapter 6, but because of Noah, God spared the future generations, us, from destruction. Because imagine if he destroys everybody, you and I never exist.
Well, Moses argued with God about the fact that if you destroy all these people, then you will be basically forsaking the covenant you made with Abraham.
Mm-hmm. And yes, in a similar way, God didn't destroy Judah because of the covenant he made with David. And so David lives on to protect his people. So just because of David, God continued to show them mercy. And so he relates that in verse 19. But it also speaks about how bad things were. Think about how bad things are that God says, I'm just going to just destroy you.
It also speaks bundles about his faithfulness. Mm-hmm. His real heart to have us walk with him and so he can bless us and save us. He's willing to go to that extent to not destroy us all.
Absolutely. So we go to verse 20. It says, in his days, this is Jehoram, in his days, Edom revolted from the rule of Judah. They revolted. He had to go to war with them. However, that didn't work because verse 22 says this, they revolted from the rule of Judah to this day. And so up to that time, Edom was subservient to Judah. However, that was taken away. And then it also talks about Libnah. Now, Libnah is not on the map, but I can kind of tell you where it was. I think I can. So in this area down below Socah, it was right in here. And so it seems like this group, this city, revolted against Judah. Now, we've seen that in the north as well. You remember Assyria had come in and taken Ramoth-Gilead and had controlled it for a while. And there were other places they battled over. Well, here, one of the very cities in Jerusalem revolted against Jerusalem itself. Now, Edom is different because Edom was its own country down here. But they were subservient to Judah before this. So because of his rule, two important allies were lost. So Chronicles gives us a little bit more information, so I want to go there and just pick out a couple of things extra that it says about Jehoram. Verse 1 tells us that Jehoshaphat, when he died, he slept with his father's that Jehoram reigned in his place. And then notice this. He had some brothers. He had Azariah, Jehiel, Zechariah, two brothers named the same thing, Michael, and Shiphtai. Now, those are his brothers. Now, generally, we might fight as siblings, but don't we typically love our siblings? And if anybody else were to ever pick on them, we're going to be right there to defend them. It didn't work quite that way in this household. What you note later in the text, the writer of Chronicles explains to us that their father had been very generous to them. He gave them gold and cities. And Jehoram, however, when he ascended the throne, he killed all his brothers with the sword. And was also some of the princes of Israel. Jehoram was 32 years old when he became king, and he reigned 8 years. So, not a great person. You think of the kind of evil heart it takes to kill your siblings, and not to just do it out of. I mean, it's terrible when we do it even out of anger or emotion, but he's just cold-blooded. He wanted to get rid of any possible rebellion against him. So he killed him. He reigned, of course, like we mentioned before, 8 years in Jerusalem. It says, verse 6, again, he walked in the way of the kings of Israel. I won't read all that again. But that's just a repeat of what's in Kings. But I do want to go down to verse 11. To kind of explain, remember we talked about, said he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel. Well, notice what he did. Verse 11, he made high places in the hill country of Judah. Now you read high places, that may seem like, well, what does that mean? He made a lodge up in the mountains or something? What does it mean, high places?
That's where they planted groves and did their sacrifices.
Of idols, right? So it's talking about idolatry. They set up these places to perform idolatry. Now, we know that's been going on in Israel and even in Judah, even the time of Jehoshaphat. You know, of all the good things Jehoshaphat did, one thing he didn't do is he didn't take down all the high places. Well, you've got Jehoram, his son, builds even more. And like he goes beyond that. It says... So he has that. He led the inhabitants of Jerusalem into whoredom. He's not talking about prostitution there. He's talking about idolatry. They whored them away from God, right? They committed adultery against God by going after these idols and made Judah to go astray. I've got to finish up here. And so out of reaction to that, a letter came to him from Elijah the prophet, saying, "Thus says the Lord, the God of David, your father, because you have not walked in my way, in the ways of Jehoshaphat, your father, or in the ways of Asa, king of Judah, but have walked in the way of the kings of Israel, and have enticed Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem into whoredom, as the house of Ahab led Israel into whoredom. You have also killed your brothers and of your father's house, who were better than you." That's what he says. You killed all those brothers? They're all better than you. Behold, the Lord will bring a great plague on your people, your children, your wives, all your possessions. Now notice this. There are some gruesome ways to die in the Bible. You think about Herod in Acts 12. Am I right? 12? 11, 12 there. I think it's 12. He died eaten by worms. You have others. You think about... that died in awful ways. Well, notice what happens here. And you yourself will have a severe sickness with disease of your bowels until your bowels come out because of the disease day by day. Oh, just the thought of that. I mean, it's awful. Awful. And of course, as you read on, that is exactly what happened. They were invaded. And the only one left alive of his household was Jehoaz, his youngest son. I thought it told there. But anyway, that's eventually how he died, and his reign came to an end. Oh, verse.
It says Elijah wrote a letter telling him what happened.
Mm-hmm. That's why I say the time frame. So some of what, but 2 Kings is not written particularly in a chronological order. So though we read about what happened with Elijah, this stuff must have occurred while that was going on. So it's almost like chapters 2 through 8 were kind of a step out, or 2 through 7 were kind of a step out of the chronological order. Anyway, 18, I'm sorry, he died after all this. He was struck in his bowels with an incurable disease. Of course, of time, at the end of 2 years, his bowels came out because of the disease, and he died in great agony. His people made no fire in his honor like the fires for his fathers. He was 32 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 8 years in Jerusalem and departed with no one's regret. They buried him in the city of David, but not in the tombs of the king. Three things there, right? Stand out to you. They didn't burn fires for him. They no one regretted his death. They didn't even bury him in the tomb of the kings. It says a lot about a man, how people treat you after you're dead. Anyway, we'll come back and look at this, continue on in, next week with Isaiah and some others. Thank you. We're dismissed and rejoin for our devotional time in just a minute.